Hello. Happy Sunday. I'm wondering if Jay and Barb are sleepy, because I know that Danielle and I are. I don't know if we're sleepy because we had a relaxing day or if we're still not recovered from Israel. Now, Jay says he slept a lot in the last 2 days. Yeah, I don't think I have yet, so I may still be having some jet lag. But usually when I teach, I wake up, so hopefully this will work out okay. but happy Sunday in June. We did have a wonderful trip to Israel. And maybe I'll get on Pal Talk soon and talk about it. This isn't the time yet. I understand that Jay and Barb have already done so, and Dove said he'd send me your recordings so I can listen to them. I don't really think I have anything else to say. So we're here for 7 Steps to Awakening. And tonight I am beginning with quote 231, which is on page 50 of the book. I'm also going to give you a link to 231 in my journal. Here's a link for the people that are in the room. Oh, I forgot to log in as admin, so it's telling me I'm not authorized. Let me just leave the room for a second, and I'll be right back as admin, and then I'll share that link with you. Thank you, Dove. And there, I've given you the link to number 231 in my journal. If there's anybody listening on the radio, you can get to that journal entry by going to RDA7. That is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. When you get to rda7stepsjournal.wordpress.com, up at the top you'll see where there's a menu option called Step 2. Click on Step 2, and then click on the number category that will allow you to find your way to number 231. And that's where we're going to begin tonight, is 231. Yeah, Jay is saying in the room that he created his WordPress journal yesterday. I noticed that, and in fact, his address is very similar to mine. If I remember correctly, it's Jay McCormick. Isn't that right? Jay McCormick, 7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. Isn't that it, Jay? Yeah, Jay McCormick, 7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. Cheryl has an online 7 Steps journal, so that's at least 3 online journals that I know about, and there may be others that I don't know about. I really don't even know who all is doing the 7 Steps, but I'm very interested in discovering that. So if you are doing the 7 Steps and you know that I might not know about it yet, just go ahead and let me know. Oh, here's Cheryl's address for her 7 Steps journal online. It's steps2self.blogspot.com. www.steps2self.blogspot.com. So there's 3 7 Steps journals to choose from. Why don't we do a little bit of silence, and then we'll begin looking at my 7 Steps journal. All right, so let's begin. Amen. Cheryl is saying that her Seven Steps journal has the quotes from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, entries from the RDA Seven Steps journal, and then also her own entries. So it's pretty comprehensive. That might be a nice one to look at. Again, her address was www.stepstoself.blogspot.com. Okay, Jamie, are you ready? I think Jamie's ready, so why don't we begin? I'm going to read number 231 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, on page 50. Let me look back and see what it is we're quoting here. Oh, we're in Sri Ramana Maharshi. He's sitting right here next to me, smiling. So let's begin. Did the self lapse from its own wholeness as being, you ask? How else did this world come to be? It came from ignorance, faults. The self can never suffer any change at any time. Again, did the self lapse from its own wholeness as being, you ask? How else did this world come to be? It came from ignorance, faults. The self can never suffer any change at any time. All right, maybe a couple people have entered the room, so let me repost the link quickly. And then let's go read number 231 in the RDA Seven Steps journal. The question, how did this world come to be, assumes the world itself is real. It is not. It is not here. Mind made illusion, and that is all. This is why the watching, noticing guidance is so powerful, albeit subtle. That which seems is a projection of that which is believed and wanted. When true realization of this fact has occurred, the apparent building blocks, the edges of the prism, must begin tumbling down, and the illusion they appeared to make vanishes. So number 231 really refers back to some previous journal entries. So let me just talk a little bit about some previous journal entries. One is 231 talks about the watching, noticing guidance. And what has been recommended for me, to me, from me, has been a guidance of noticing that anything I see, I believe in. Just noticing that it's true, I believe in that. In fact, I was just remembering when I was walking through a store not too long ago, and there was a little girl walking by, and she was talking to another little girl, and she said something like, what was it she said? She said something like, I don't believe in, you know, it'd be something like, I don't believe in being nice to people just to get them to like you. That's what she said. I don't believe in, or something like that. I'm actually making it up because I don't remember. It was something similar. I don't believe in being nice to people just to get them to like you. Now, I'm certain that what she was really trying to say is that, you know, she doesn't want to do that. She doesn't want to play that game. But the truth is, based on what this is saying, she did believe in it. She believed that it was a possibility that she or someone else could be nice only because they wanted someone else to like them. She does believe that exists in the world. If she didn't believe that existed in the world, she wouldn't see it in herself or in anyone else. And that is what this is saying. If you see something, notice that you do believe in it. So if I see unfairness, whether it's the unfairness of one friend to another friend or someone towards me, or whether it's the unfairness of one group of people against another group of people. If I see unfairness in the world anywhere, what the watching, noticing guidance is recommending is that I notice that I do believe unfairness exists. That's what it asks. Just notice that I believe in unfairness. And it says here in 231 that the watching, noticing guidance is powerful, albeit subtle. In other words, you know, especially with the ego engaged, we may not feel like we're really doing much when we just notice, just a very soft noticing, that I do believe in whatever I see. You know, I see two people falling in love and my heart is so happy to see them falling in love, but I pause and notice, I do believe in falling in love. I believe in that. I notice two people in conflict, having a fight and suffering and you know, I just look at myself and I say, wait a minute, I do believe that people can conflict and suffer from that. You know, I see someone sick and suffering, painful, dying, someone dying, and I'm aching because they're dying. I notice, I do believe in sickness, physical suffering, and death. This is all that it's asking. Notice that everything I see, which really means perceive, everything I perceive, acknowledge, yes, I do believe in that. And what the previous journal said was, what's really going to happen as I just practice this noticing that I believe, this watching and noticing guidance, what happens is that the direct relationship between the beliefs and the projection of the world becomes apparent. I start noticing that it is true, I do believe in everything I see. I do. Also, in my particular case, I'm fortunate because there are some beliefs that I have sincerely and honestly let go of. And what I know as a result of that is that I no longer see those things in the world. I no longer see rejection, for example. I no longer see betrayal. I no longer see myself or others being used by someone else. I may see the same circumstances that someone else would call rejection, betrayal, or being used, but I see those circumstances differently. That they no longer have those ideas attached to them. I think when I talked about this in an earlier teaching, I probably mentioned the movie The Invention of Lying. I probably recommended the movie The Invention of Lying. Because if you see that movie, you'll see that the concept, the belief in lying did not exist. Lying mean telling an untruth. Right? That belief or that concept did not even exist in the minds of the people in that film. And since it did not exist in their mind, they couldn't perceive it. They couldn't see it. They couldn't even imagine it. So if I see something, it means that I believe it. The other thing that is mentioned in number 231, it talks about the edges of the prism. In previous journal entries, the prism is likened to the mind. And what it says is that, you know, if you have light, light by itself is just pure light. But if you add the interference of a prism, then the light appears as colors. But the colors are the illusion and the light is the reality. If you take away the interference, you still just have light. And it says that's like the mind. The mind is the interference. The mind, when you insert the mind into the beingness and you filter beingness through mind, then you get all of these separate objects, including thoughts. You get beingness as objects. But if you take the mind away, then you do not have beingness as objects. You only have beingness. Okay, so with that little bit of explanation, let's go back and read number 231 again. The question, how did this world come to be, assumes the world itself is real. It is not. It is not here. Mind-made illusion, and that is all. This is why the watching, noticing guidance is so powerful, albeit subtle. That which seems is a projection of that which is believed and wanted. When true realization of this fact has occurred, the apparent building blocks, the edges of the prism, must begin tumbling down, and the illusion they appeared to make vanishes. So what this is saying is if we're willing to do simple practices like the watching, noticing guidance, what begins to happen is that our beliefs, which before probably weren't even noticed, our beliefs first of all become noticed, but then they begin to lose their weight or lose their matter or lose their meaning. And as they begin to lose their weight or matter or meaning, then they are no longer projected into the world for us. We start to see things literally disappearing, like rejection disappearing right out of the world, betrayal disappearing right out of the world. And as we begin to see even just a few ideas, a few beliefs disappearing right out of the world, we get a much clearer idea of the fact that the world we see is not real, that it is just based on the mind. And then, of course, we're willing to follow through by following this type of guidance more. So instead of sitting around and wondering how the world came to be, this was Ramana Maharshi's recommendation, because of course he was perceived as a guru, although he never claimed that himself. But as a perceived guru, people would come and ask him, you know, metaphysical questions. Like, if the self is all there is, how did this world come to be? What went wrong within the self to make this happen? And his answer would be, don't even think about that. Don't give that any thought at all. That's not where your attention needs to go. Instead, and then he would guide their attention to a practice, most commonly self-inquiry, but not always. He varied the practice based on what was most fitting for the person. But he always recommended, instead of worrying about how the world came to be, instead of worrying about how this all happened, focus on the spiritual practice that's going to undo it for you, right? And then when it's undone for you, you will know everything you need to know. And so this journal entry is saying the same thing, and it's recommending the specific practice of the watching, noticing guidance. Noticing that if I see it, I believe it. There's always a connection. Always. There's not an exception. There's always a connection between what I believe and what I see. I never see anything I don't believe. And that first step is the beginning of the falling apart or the undoing of the beliefs. All right, so we're going to scroll down. If you're in the journal, all you have to do is scroll down and look on the left side. You'll see a number 232. If you click on that, that will take you to the next journal entry. And what I'm going to do is also copy that link and put it in the room, at least for Teddy. I know Teddy has entered. And I'm going to start first by reading from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, number 232. So this is a Ramana Maharshi teaching. Hello, Teddy. It's good to be back. Although it was also good to be in Israel. Both are good. All right, here's number 232. Vast, whole, immutable. The self reflected in the mind's distorting mirror may appear to move. Know that it is the image moving, The true self never moves or changes. So again, vast, whole, immutable, the self reflected in the mind's distorting mirror may appear to move. Know that it is the image moving. The true self never moves or changes. All right, let's look at number 232 in the RDA Seven Steps Journal. Notice how mind is always moving. Watch it. Constant movement. Look at the world. Notice it is the same as mind. Always moving and changing. Now, take time to drop into the still, quiet heart. Notice its peaceful, present being. Can it be seen that the world is like the mind? That the world comes from mind? Can that relationship be noticed? Can it also be seen that beingness on its own is non-affected by world or mind? So mind here is synonymous with ego. And probably most of the people that come to this particular room, ACIM Gather, for A Course in Miracles voice room in Paltalk, probably most of the people that come to this room have spent at least some time studying A Course in Miracles, may even perceive themselves as a student of A Course in Miracles. You might say, I am a student of A Course in Miracles, or I am a teacher of A Course in Miracles. It's not true, but it might be how you perceive yourself. Well, as someone who studies A Course in Miracles, you know that A Course in Miracles teaches that the world that we see comes from the ego, right? That's not a new teaching for us. The problem is that for many of us, if not all of us, I don't know for sure, but at least many of us, when we read that in A Course in Miracles and got to some point of acceptance of that idea, the acceptance was at an intellectual level. For most of us, there was no genuine realization that the world comes from the mind, or the ego, as the Course would put it. It became a new belief for us, maybe. We could say it to someone. But when it comes right down to it, our actual belief is still that the world is real. We may say that it's not. We may say it's just a projection of the ego. But our actual belief remains, I am a person in a very real world, and when problems come up, I better damn well deal with them. Because if not, you know, it's going to suck, and I'm going to suffer. Well, one thing about this seven steps practice for me is that a big part of the guidance has been not to replace belief with belief. In other words, this practice is not about replacing the belief that the world is real with another belief that it's not. That's not what this is about. This practice is about seeing or directly experiencing or knowing for myself. I made a post in Facebook yesterday. I copied something that John Troy said and posted it for everyone's contemplation. And then underneath it, I also posted a comment that someone else had made to John Troy's comment in the place where I found it. Let me read that to you. Let me scroll down here underneath. There's so many things on my Facebook page right now. Israel pictures and fire pictures and a lot going on. It does not look like a bored person has this Facebook page. Oh, here's the John Troy quote. Okay, so here's what someone else said that I also posted. This person's name is Robert Martin. And Robert Martin said, "My personal view is that only private internal investigation is of use, and claims by or about others are quite useless. Listen to everyone, believe no one, find out for yourself." And after I posted that, I liked it, and if I could, I'd like it again. But if I click now, it's going to unlike, and I don't want to do that, so I'll just leave it. But listen again to what Robert Martin said. "My personal view is that only private internal investigation is of use, and claims by or about others are quite useless. Listen to everyone. Believe no one. Find out for yourself." I love that because that really captures for me the heart of the purpose of the Seven Steps practice. It's to stop the believing of spiritual ideas, you know, like reading A Course in Miracles and reading that the world is not real, reading that it's a projection from the ego and adopting that as a belief. The Seven Steps work is about not doing that. It's about taking that time within yourself to go and see for yourself, find out for yourself. And number 232 is a very simple exercise, a very simple part of that noticing for myself. First it says, notice how mind is always moving. Watch it. Constant movement. And just in a little bit of stillness, you can see that so easily, right? You sit back, you're not reading anything, you're not purposefully thinking about anything, you're not trying to figure anything out. You're just sitting, doing nothing, right? And there's the mind kicking in with this story, that story, this thought. And of course, as you know, you catch it and you pull it back, but then it doesn't take long before it's back again. So it's very easy for us to notice that the mind is always moving. We can see that for ourselves. We don't have to believe it. We can see it. The next thing, the next thing is look at the world. Notice it is the same as mind. Always moving and changing. There's Jamie wanting me to move and change right now. Get out of this chair and go do something fun with her. You'll have to wait, my love. I'm busy. But we can see that too. You know, if you pay attention to the world at all, you can see that the world is always moving and changing. The world is never still. The world never stops, right? So we can see that the mind and the world are alike in that way. They at least have that in common. Now, this isn't necessarily jumping all the way to having the direct experience of realizing that the world is a projection of the mind, but it's a first step in that direction. We can say, through our own direct observation, it's true. The mind is always moving, and it's true. The world is always moving. It is true. I see that for myself. They share at least that characteristic. Right? And then the next step is to drop into the still, quiet heart. Now, what's interesting for me is that I have discovered the stillness within. And I've noticed that the stillness is always still, just like the mind is always moving. I can focus my attention on the moving mind, or I can focus my attention on the stillness. But I don't really make either. I don't make the moving mind. I don't make the stillness. Just in my present experience, they are both there simultaneously. So here I'm being asked to direct my attention to that stillness that's there, even while the mind is still moving, right? And notice its peaceful, present being. And then again it says, can it be seen that the world is like the mind, right? The world is not peaceful and present like that still, quiet heart. The world is moving like the mind. Can that relationship be noticed? And can it also be noticed that the beingness, or the still, quiet heart on its own, is not affected by the world or mind? It doesn't matter how much mind moves. It doesn't matter how much world moves. There's this stillness or this beingness within that is absolutely constant and unaffected. And if you have achieved, forgive the word achieved, it's just the word that's coming to mind, but if you have achieved the intuitive insight to notice the still, quiet heart, then you know from your own observation that the still, quiet heart is always still. It doesn't matter what the mind is thinking about. It doesn't matter what situation the world is presenting. It is always still. So you can acknowledge that there's a relationship between the world and mind, and there is not a relationship between the heart or beingness and the world, or between the heart and beingness or the mind. There seems to not be a relationship there. Things can be all upheaval within the world and within the mind, and yet this still, quiet heart remains the still, quiet heart. So just noticing where these relationships are and where these relationships are not are beginning steps to having an experience, an actual inner seeing, that the world is the projection of mind. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 233. It's on the left when you scroll down. And I will also put this link in the room. And I'm going to read 233 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. How can the dark, delusive sense of separateness affect the self, which is non-dual? It is the mind's divisive vision which sees difference. Awareness knows no separateness at all. Now I'll read that again. How can the dark, delusive sense of separateness affect the self, which is non-dual? It is the mind's divisive vision which sees difference. Awareness knows no separateness at all. All right, going to number 233 in the journal. Look at the mind. What stories or worries or desires are found there? What are the different components of those stories? What are the characters, the scenes, and the circumstances? Now, fortunately, it doesn't take long for us to take part in this little practice, this little exercise, because, again, the mind is never still. When you first try to look at mind and ask these questions, mind may shut up for a second, like, oh, shit, somebody's looking. I got to be quiet. But it won't last long. If you just sit and be still and just wait, mind will start up again with some story. So that stillness that comes from trying to look at it doesn't last long. So if you just sit and be still until the story arises on its own, then you can practice this exercise with the story that arises. You can first of all just notice, what is the story, or what is the worry, or what is the desiring that's happening in mind now that it's started chattering again? What is that? And what are the different components of the story, or the worry, or the desire, right? Who are the characters? What are the scenes? What are the circumstances? Just kind of look at it and notice all the parts that it has. Next in the exercise, it says, now in the heart. So move away from the mind to the still, quiet heart. Now in the heart, taking time to leave the stories behind and become focused on the presence of live being. Are there any parts in the heart? Can one separate character or one separate scene be found there? And again, if you have achieved the intuitive realization of the heart, and you're able to put your attention there and you're able to be with that, well, then you know that there are no thoughts there. There are no stories there. There are no separate characters or separate scenes there. When we were in Israel, at one of the Elijah sites, we were in a garden on top of Mount Carmel. And I remember talking about devotion. And I talked about that when I am deep in devotion, which means away from stories, away from thoughts, away from beliefs, away from opinions. When I'm deep in devotion, I find only oneness there. I said something like, we're joined in devotion. Now, I used the word devotion, but we're joined in that stillness, heart, in that present beingness. Which has no thoughts. Because it takes a thought to separate. It takes a thought to create a part. Different parts. So this exercise is having us look at this and see this directly for ourselves. That when attention is given to the mind and what the mind is talking about, there are a lot of characters, a lot of different components, a lot of different circumstances, just all these little parts to what the mind is doing. But if we drop into the heart, drop into the awareness, beingness, we can't find any of that. It doesn't even exist there. Not a single part. That's oneness, right? Without even one part, not even one part exists there. And we're all joined in that. So I mentioned that. And we were at the Elijah Garden. I mentioned that it doesn't matter to me whether someone is a Muslim or a Jew or a Christian or an Advaita Vedanta or a Course in Miracles student or what, because there's an awareness that that point of devotion or that point of still quiet heart or that point of beingness is exactly the same. Where there is no thought of Muslim or Jew or Christian or Advaita Vedanta or Course student. This is why I giggled earlier when I said, you know, some of you may say, I am a Course student. And I said, well, that's not true. You see, even in that thought separates. That thought separates Course students from non-Course students. Even that thought. Any thought separates. But the heart, the stillness, the beingness, there's no separation there. It doesn't exist. because there are no thoughts there. So look at mind. What stories or worries or desires are found there? What are the different components of those stories? What are the characters, the scenes, and the circumstances? Now in the heart, taking time to leave the stories behind and become focused on the presence of live being. Are there any parts in the heart? Can one separate character or one separate scene be found there? Without mind, are there parts? Without parts, can there be a story? By doing this exercise, what you will be able to see for yourself is that the answer to these questions is no. Without mind, there are no parts. Without parts, there cannot be a story. And eventually that will lead to, without mind, there cannot be a world. You need mind to have parts. You need mind to have story. And what is the world except parts and story? That's what it is. It's parts and story. So again, through direct experience, this is taking us one step closer to seeing for ourselves, from within ourselves, from within our own looking, that the world must be a projection of the mind. Because it's the mind that makes up parts. It's the mind that makes up stories. That all begins there. Before mind, back to stillness heart, those things do not exist. And we can verify that within our current experience now. We can find that place where they do not exist in us now. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 234. Hello, Jamie. What's up, my love? Do you want to say something into the mic? Nope, she didn't want to say anything into the mic. She gave me a funny look. Wait. She's, just so you know, she's nudging my arm and now crawling up in my lap and licking my face. Hello. She thinks that if she does this long enough, I'll get up and walk away and go with her. All right, 234. Let me give you the link. Sorry, Jamie, I'm busy. I'm sorry, I love you, but I'm busy. Go lay down. No, you go lay down. I love you, go lay down. Okay? All right, 234. Those who forget the harm, the false world there before us does, and cling to it as real and comfortable, mistake, alas, a floating bear for a boat, only to be crushed and drowned in the sea of birth. This is a really interesting quote. You ready? Those who forget the harm the false world there before us does, right? Those who forget the harm the false world there before us does and cling to it as real and comfortable, mistake, alas, a floating bear for a boat, only to be crushed and drowned in the sea of birth. So not all of us have personal lives that suck. Actually, I've never really had a personal life that sucks. That's the truth. If you were to take all of the personal lives in the world today and compare them, you'd find that mine is pretty dang good. My parents did divorce when I was in sixth grade, but there ends the tragedies of my young life. Both of my parents always loved me. My aunts and my uncles and my cousins and my grandparents all love me. There was no abuse in my childhood experience. I have traveled all over the world. I've had lots of fun experiences. I've always had enough money. I've always had a place to live. Life here doesn't suck. But what this quote is saying is, if I start to say, well, you know, the world's not that bad, why would I want to wake up for the world? I kind of like it. It's kind of fun. You know, I got to go to Israel last week, and then I went to Pikes Peak yesterday, and, it's kind of nice. I like it. But this is saying is that if I forget the harm that the false world before us does and cling to it as if it's real and comfortable, that is like mistaking a floating bear. Imagine a floating grizzly for a boat and climbing on his belly. What's going to happen is I'm going to be clawed, crushed, and drowned. And this says, in the sea of birth, which I'm assuming means that next life might not be as good. Might not be quite so blessed next time around. I remember Robert Adams talking about this, and he said that in duality, you always have good and bad. That's what duality is. So maybe you're on a good or a favorable existence now, some kind of a phase that's good or favorable. But at some time, just because it's duality, just because of the makeup of duality, that pendulum is going to swing. And you will no longer be in the good or the favorable. It will swing to the not so good, not so favorable. So he's saying you can never trust duality, because duality inherently means both. Right? Well, that's what this quote is saying as well. So let's go to number 234 in the journal. This world is not all bad, the mind may say. My life is actually quite comfortable. To be satisfied with a present state of comfort in the world is to forget the world's changing nature. So again, the same as Robert Adams and the same as Ramana Maharshi. It won't stay good. It can't stay good, not the world, because it changes. It's duality. So the only way to have consistent happiness is to wake up to reality. It cannot be found in the world. All right, let's, and people die, Barb. I thought that, but I didn't say it out loud, Barb, so I'm glad you did, because I can come back to it. Because even a good life ends, right? And people die. That's what happens, right? That's what happens, it just can't be good forever in the world. It can't be. So, all right, let's scroll down and click on number 235. And I will also post that link in the room. And I'm going to read number 235 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. When will the fool who thinks the body and the world are permanent and clings to them find peace? Only when this folly leaves him and he trusts and like a limpet clings to that, the self within. Thenceforward he shall never more know pain. I like that word, thenceforward. Maybe we can start using that word, Danielle. Thence forward. Okay? From then on, I think it means. Thence forward. All right. When will the fool who thinks the body and the world are permanent and clings to them find peace? Only when this folly leaves him and he trusts and like a limpet clings to that, the self within. Thence forward, he shall never more know pain. Oh, and Barb is telling us a limpet is a snail. It's funny, Barb answered before Jay asked. Barb said, a limpet is a snail, and then Jay says, what the heck is a limpet, right after that. So Barb and Jay must have formed some kind of a relationship there in Israel. She's answering his questions before he asks. All right, let's go to the journal. She says she looked it up in Wikipedia. All right, number 235 in the journal. Outward looking, eternal joy can never be found. Inward listening, trusting, focusing, being is the way. I think Jay has decided he likes the words, the way. Isn't that right, Jay? We heard the way referred to a lot when we were in Israel as the path of following Jesus. And he says he's now a follower of the way. Yeah. Outward looking, eternal joy can never be found. Inward listening, trusting, focusing, being is the way. Oh, and Barb says she's going to watch The Way tonight. I want to watch that with Danielle as well. last night I had a friend call me. I had a couple friends call me, actually. There was some upheaval going on in their home, and it was pretty strong upheaval. I'm not going to go into the details. I don't feel like if that's appropriate, but anyone would agree that what was going on in their house was an upheaval. I'll just say it that way. Anyone would agree that this was a fairly traumatic time. And a friend called me upset, not knowing what to do, and asked what to do. I was actually asleep. So I had to kind of pull myself together to understand what was going on. And the only thing that I could tell her, the only advice that I could give, was that she find a way to get inside of herself. In her case, she journals, so I recommended journaling. And get inside of herself and find out what Holy Spirit had to say. Let Holy Spirit provide a perspective. You know, some people may have tried to give advice about what she could do to get out of the situation she was in or to mitigate the difficulty that was occurring. But for me to give worldly advice regarding this situation that was occurring, it didn't even make sense. The only thing that made sense was to say, find a way to be with yourself and go within. That was the only thing I could say. And fortunately, this morning I talked to her, and she sounded like she was doing much better. The situation did not improve. I will say that. That's quite interesting. In fact, the situation deteriorated, and yet she was much better because she had taken my advice and gone within. Let's look at number 235 again. Outward looking, eternal joy can never be found. Inward listening, trusting, focusing, being is the way. And this means always, whether it appears to be a good day when things are going well, or whether it appears to be a bad day, there's a big upheaval. The only way to find consistency is to stay inward. Stay inward on the, quote, good days, and stay inward during the upheavals. Do not allow your attention to be pulled out. Because when your attention is pulled out, you're then going to experience duality, which means you will experience the good days, but you will also experience the upheavals. the consistency, the constancy is by learning to stay in, always in. All right, let's scroll down to number 236 and click on that one, and I will give the link in the room for anybody who is interested and is not already in the journal. And it's Jennifer has entered the room. Hello, Jennifer. Nice to see you again. I hope you guys had fun in Cincinnati. I'm guessing that you did. Okay, number 236 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. Only by courtesy is the body, vulnerable and born to die, called an entity substantial. The sole reality, the only thing permanent and ultimate, is self-awareness. That alone. All right, let me read this quote again. Only by courtesy is the body, vulnerable and born to die, called an entity substantial. The sole reality, the only thing permanent and ultimate, is self-awareness. That alone. All right, let's look at the journal, number 236. The body, although it may be taken care of while it is a present experience, is never an experience that can be made to last forever. To identify with the body as myself is a foolish choice destined to suffer. Come to know eternal self, present now and present when the experience of body has ended. Why suffer with the idea of body as self when true self is present and available to know now? There are certainly yogis in the world today, or at least people say there are, I have not met one, who have lived hundreds of years. Hundreds of years is still not forever, is what this is saying. Still not forever. If you are attached to the idea that I am this person, I am this body, at some point that attachment will be forcibly broken. Because this personality, this body, will not last forever. And if the attachment is forcibly broken, there will be pain and suffering. And maybe that's the ultimate meaning of the word death. The pain and suffering that comes from having you ripped away from yourself against your will. Because that which you thought you were was only temporary and was not made to last and could not last. Of course, then you become reattached to another body, another personality, hoping this one will last. But then the same thing happens again, the being ripped away from who you have attached yourself to be. The letting go of that, the dying before you die, it's sometimes called, but the letting go of that attachment to the idea that I am this body, I am this personality, and reuniting with yourself, that ends death forever. When you reunite with the self that is constant, you are never ripped away from it again, you see? Now, this again does not mean that we don't take care of the body. I mean, if we're someone who exercises, we're someone who exercises. If we're someone who don't, we're someone who don't. I mean, these things just seem to be. They're a part of the personality makeup, I suppose. So the body may be taken care of with exercise or diet or medicine or whatever your personality and your life in this lifetime is giving you, right? Whatever is unfolding, whatever's there, that may be a part of that your experience. But no matter what, you can't make that body last forever. You can't make even this personality mind last forever. So why wait for the inevitable suffering of being ripped away from it when you could choose to gently disengage or detach from it now by coming to know the eternal self, which is present here now? Let your identification switch over to that which lasts. And that's what Jesus called eternal life, the way. And with that, I'm done. Jennifer, have a great time. Everyone else, I'll see you tomorrow. Bye.